Welcome back, guys. Happy Friday. DGS 204. Sue Thomas is here for Sue at 2, and it's Peony Day.
Yay! They came early this year.
Or as we call them in South Roxana, pennies.
Yeah, you call them pennies.
Yeah.
Which is not right.
Yeah, we do a lot of wrong stuff.
Yeah.
They're early, and they're beautiful.
Thank you. They're from my garden, and they're my favorite flower, and they bloom usually around Mother's Day, so it's really early. But
they're ant-free.
They're ant-free. Because they're early.
Yeah.
It's like a double bonus.
I love it.
Yeah. And I planted, no one cares, but I planted a really dark colored one a couple years ago, and this should be the first year. And I've got, you know, like two or three big buds, but they haven't come yet. These are the traditional, as far as I can find, best smelling ones. There are some that are white that look like a fried egg. They've got yellow in the middle, and they smell slightly different. I didn't bring those. I just bring you the classics. Which really smell the best.
My favorite smelling flower.
Yeah, I mean, nothing better than that. Mm-hmm. Even Kevin Wheeler, do you like the smell of that flower?
Yeah, that smells like a good flower.
Yeah, when she gave you your flower, she's like, this is going to be awkward.
Last year, he wasn't sure what to do with it, but you could take it home.
This year, I'm going to wear it as a corsage.
Ooh, there's an idea.
Wheels, you want to tell everyone about the super smart orangutan?
Yeah, did you guys? I'm sure you've heard something about something along these lines, but this is to me the coolest thing. So, they observed an orangutan in Indonesia. He had a wound on his cheek. Like he got in a fight. I don't know if he got. Did he get in a fight? Yeah, he got in a fight. So he found plants that we know are medicinal, and he chewed it up, and he put it all in there, and he keeps doing that because it's helping him heal, and he knows this. He knows it's a painkiller, and then it obviously has some healing qualities too. And they've never observed that before in orangutans. But, like, that's our very close cousin doing something that our ancestors certainly did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have aspirin and Tylenol and all this other stuff. But it's just fascinating to see it at that level.
It is.
Like, you think, oh, dumb animals, go to the zoo and watch them. But, man, that's really smart to know what plant and then what to do with it.
And then you wonder, like, from our own evolution, like, do other orangutans just see him and go, well, that's pretty damn smart. So give me a little bit of that.
That's what they're trying to figure out, right? They're trying to figure out if he learned it from watching some other orangutan do it at some point in the past, or if he was just like eating it and then accidentally touched the thing with his hand and he realized, hey, I felt better after I did that. Let me try that again. So they don't know if he like spontaneously learned it through just eating something or if that's something that they're a little, do they call them tribe, the orangutan or group or pot, whatever, his fellow orangutans in his little jungle. They don't know if it's something that they all do, and they're trying to find that out. So they're trying to observe to see if it's a behavior that is beyond just this one guy. But even if it's just that one guy, he figured that out.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty brilliant.
Pretty neat. Andrew, what's your thing about the Kentucky Derby? I can't make heads or tails out of what you wrote.
Oh, I placed a bet on it.
Oh, now I get it. Hypocritically because you hate gambling.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've been very much against sports gambling. I've always been a little bit, Sue remembers this, I've always been a little bit of a sports bettor.
Yes. we'll go with yes on that. We had Andrew in charge of putting bets on us for something or other, and it was just some sort of nightmare.
College football, if I remember.
Didn't go well for old Dave.
There were two separate incidents. There was me in charge of all sports betting for the group, and we had the spreadsheet, and then it got way too complicated.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out how to place like half the bets that everybody wanted me to place. And then the other one was Dave wanting a bet on a Mizzou game. Yeah. And me
did
placing,
that ever happen?
Well, I placed the bet, but I placed the wrong bet.
Yeah. Right.
I was doing like a parlay, and it came through, and it should have been like $200.
Oh, yeah. No.
But
no,
he just betted to win, and I got like $2.50.
Oh,
yeah. I was like, hey, where's my money?
Yeah, so he was like, all right, how much money we get? And I was like, like $4. And he was like, no, it should be like 200. I was like, no, you're wrong.
Actually, that was his mistake for putting you in charge.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Silly me. Silly me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the one that lives in Illinois, so there. But anyway, I'm placing a bet, and it's a sure thing, and I was going to see if anybody else wanted in on some of this action.
Who's the sure thing in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I wrote down the horse's name.
Fierceness?
Just a touch.
And what leads you to believe this?
My dad did some research and he told me he thinks it's a sure thing.
Okay. All right.
Good enough.
I don't know what kind of research he did. I know he's never bet on horses before and neither have I.
Wasn't it Rich Strike that just a couple of years ago was the 80-1 shot who won? I think so. Hmm. So maybe Andrew, who knows? What's the odds?
I think it's 13 or 14-1.
Okay, well.
So not horrible. The app said he has a hot trainer. So I don't know what that means.
Person's look have to do
with it? It had a big sign. It said hot trainer right here.
My first girlfriend's dad was somehow involved with the horse racing over on the east side. And is it the Black Stallion Room? It's like a smorgasbord. And we used to go there because he was connected. And we would just sit in there and he'd give us cash to go make bets.
Oh, my God.
When you're a teenager?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dang.
Do you guys watch the Derby? Is that a thing for you guys?
If it happens to be I'll watch it.
You like it?
Yeah.
But I'm not going out of my way.
Nah. Have you ever been to like the track or anything?
I have.
Ooh,
I went
fun.
To watch the, it wasn't the Derby. That's too much for me with the hats and the whatnot. But I went to watch another horse run and it was a female something for something. She was the best in it. Well, obviously I'm really up to date on it, but I did go to the track and it was a really cool experience.
So Sue's throwing out hundreds.
No, I didn't do that. I think I put $10.
We're all getting rich.
I didn't understand what a parlay was.
Kev, do you think there's a chance for Missouri to come through with the sports book? Do you have any inside info for that?
No, but it sounds like it's being pushed super hard by everybody.
It's making all the news.
It's supposed to be... Well, put it this way, like 2 years ago, we talked to someone, I think it was me and Ron and Amy when we were just getting started on the old version of the show, that it was like next year. So it's close, but there's like one dude that's been holding it up, and hopefully they can convince one dude to stop being that because the state is losing revenue to every state around it. Literally every state surrounding Missouri has legalized sports betting.
One dude, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One dude.
One
and
senator,
he's connected to like the gambling machines you can see in gas stations or something, and I don't remember exactly what the connection is.
Is it Denny?
It might be.
That sounds right.
He's just the one dude who's ruining everything and costing the state money.
What do you guys think of this story? A 73-year-old man in Florida was given a felony battery charge because he was causing some sort of scene at a McDonald's, I believe it is. And they came and they put him in handcuffs and he was still holding on to his cheeseburger. And even though he was in handcuffs, he was able to whip it at the cop and he hit the cop in the leg and they charged him with a felony. So it's kind of dividing the internet. He's 73 years old, by the way.
I mean, you shouldn't do that. You run whenever you're getting arrested and you're doing stuff like that, you're running the risk of getting more charges tacked on. So I'm not going to be one of those people who are like, how could you do this to him? Like, he shouldn't have done that.
I agree with you.
I feel this way, though, about the same way as I do about the guys who accidentally brought ammunition into Turks Caicos. Like, okay, you did something wrong, but it seems like the punishment.
He said
is
Turks
a bit
and
more.
Caicos, like you say pennies.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Caicos.
Yeah, I said it wrong, didn't I? Is that how you say it wrong?
No, I think you said it right.
Oh, did I?
No, but you went out of your way to say it right to prove to everybody.
No, I don't. I just know that whenever you say something, even if it's wrong, say it confidently because then it sounds good.
That's the story of your life.
Yeah.
It pretty much is.
Yeah.
It's Caicos. Please continue.
All right, Caicos. There you go.
Did you guys see the story that, I don't know why I love this story because I'm against student loan forgiveness for various reasons.
Because it's... ridiculous.
So Biden just forgave $6 billion additional dollars to 300,000 students, all of whom who went to the Art Institute, which may be the place where you draw the turtle and get in. But the reason was that the government found that they had been misled into thinking that they would be able to get a job with a working living wage. And that's why they forgave all that money. It was particularly to them because they felt like the Art Institute had lured them in. You're going to be a great artist. And then none of them, they're all, you know, waiting tables. So they forgave all their debt.
I got a better idea. How about if you think the school did that, the Department of Justice sues the school, takes the money they get from the school and gives that to the students. If this is the thing that bothers me the most about the whole thing. It's not the, well, I didn't get mine paid for, because I didn't. I paid whatever my wife and I paid we ended up owing. I'm not worried about that. That's not my reason for not liking it. But you're not doing anything to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The problem still is happening every single year with new students going into the same system.
What have you changed?
So if you're going to do anything, fix the problem. If you think it's a problem, if you're saying that the kids are being misled, well, then that sounds like fraud. Let's start an investigation. Let's go get the money from the people that have been making the money off of this. If it's that. If it's not that, then stop it.
Right. I agree. Look at that. I agree with Kevin.
Yeah.
How about you, youngins? What do you think?
Well, I think you need to have a little bit more personal responsibility when you're choosing a career, and rather than to just throw your hands up and say, well, they told me I was going to get a job. Like,
right.
I was also a teenager at one point. I would have loved to have been an artist, but I knew I wasn't Picasso. Like, I'm not going to be able to make a career out of that. You know what I mean? I just don't get this whole thing where it's like they misled me. Well, they're marketing to get you to come to their school because that's what these places do.
In government, like when we were down in 97.1 and it was much more political, it was always, the government's choosing winners and losers and such. But it also now seems to be choosing who has been aggrieved and who has not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of colleges out there where people went in buying a pig and a poke and came out with nothing to show for it. That we're not the Art Institute.
It's tough to get a job with a poli-sci degree. Should we start forgiving poli-sci degrees nationwide because you picked a bad reason to go to college. That's not my fault.
There's actually a comparable here what's happening with sports right now. So the NCAA is being sued by a bunch of former athletes who said, you kept me, illegally kept me from earning money off my name, image, and likeness for all my time.
Mm. And I wondered when this was coming.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're negotiating a settlement right now that'll be about $3 billion.
Ooh.
Because if they keep going, they're going to lose, and the losses will be $5, $6 billion. So they're going to end up giving these people money. If we can say that NCAA sports was restricting people, was misleading people, was saying you can't have that, even though legally you could we not make the same argument that the college institutions as a whole and the student loan institution as a whole have been doing the same kind of thing? It's not exactly the same.
I don't know anything about the case other than what you just told me, but I'm a little surprised they're settling, because I would think that the NCAA's defense of, yeah, it used to be one way and we changed it, and now it's another.
No, but it was what the argument being made, and they're losing the argument. I've seen the analysis of it, and the lawyers that are not involved in the case are saying the NCAA is going to lose. They better settle, because every day they don't settle, they're going to lose more money. Because they illegally restricted you from doing something. Like, they can't break the law to make their own sports rules. You can't do that.
At the risk of sounding dumb, can I ask a question about the student loans? Why doesn't the government just say, okay, we're going to negotiate this to where you're just paying what you owe as opposed to all this crazy interest?
That's solid question.
That seems like the way to fix the problem.
I saw somebody do a video on this, and that's what they said is happening.
Huh.
That what's happening is that what they're canceling is the interest, essentially.
Okay. So most people have probably paid off their principal.
Well, the problem is you never pay the principal. You're only paying interest most of the time. Like, that's the problem. That's why it stacks up, because you're making minimum payments. It's like credit cards. If you only make the minimum payments, you're never paying down the
principal. My understanding, it's pretty well agreed upon by economists, that what has driven the price of college up so much are student loans. Mm. Because the government
guaranteed it
and subsidized it, and people can quote unquote afford it. And so the colleges have said, great.
Yep.
It's no longer 10 grand a year. It's 20. Now it's 30. Now it's 40. Now it's 80.
Exactly.
224 DGS. You know what I feel kind of sorry for? The second Great Pyramid. You know, like the pyramids of Giza, there's one that's the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right next to it is one that's like 2 feet shorter.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, pretty much. And
wow.
Everyone's just like, it's the Great Pyramid. And then there's like Leon, you know, who's just hanging out in the shadow of the Great Pyramid.
What if the Khufu pyramid's name was Leon?
I would love that.
Could be.
I think it's Khufu who's in that one.
Oh.
Khufu?
I think that's his name.
Khufu and Leon right next door.
Yeah. Yeah. I should have known that, Dave.
Jimmy the Third.
Yeah. Bill the Cat.
What if we did that now with like our names? Like Jimmy the Fourth. Ricky the Tenth.
Ricky the Tenth.
You know what? Who else bugged me over the week? The Energizer Bunny.
Really?
And I realize he's always bugged me. He's always seemed disruptive and creepy.
He's a bugged bunny.
He really stressed me out when I was a kid.
Thank you.
Like, oh, he keeps going and going. Like, right? That's not a good thing to me.
And
he
what
needs
he's
to
doing,
rest.
What he's doing is not relaxing. He's pounding a bass drum.
He's a toy.
He is a toy. That's a good point.
He's
there,
not even
right,
a toy.
No,
he's a fake
toy. He's a fake toy. That's
and
a good point.
He's making me mad.
Where'd you see him, Dave? Was he on the TV?
He's back.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. He's around.
He is back for some reason.
Remember that?
I would punt that thing.
Was it Chuck Connors that did the battery commercial where he put it on his shoulder? Like, go ahead.
No,
dare you to
that
knock
was
it off.
Robert Conrad.
Robert Conrad.
That's right.
Let's bring those back.
Of Wild Wild West fame.
Yeah. Robert Conrad.
I've never sounded older.
Oh, my God. Well, I agreed with you wholeheartedly.
And I brought it up, so.
Great.
Dang it.
Rach, what's your question for Andrew about DoorDashing?
Oh, so I saw an article today. A bunch of DoorDash drivers were surveyed and asked how much they would like to be tipped. And it was way more than what Andrew had told me in the past was an acceptable tip. Because you were always saying, like, hey, if you give $5, you are above the curve.
That was my experience, to be sure.
Then again, your picture was naked on a toilet. So
that's true.
Well, but I forgot about that.
But all of these
a lot of people haven't.
Yeah.
All of these DoorDash drivers that were surveyed were like, no, 15 to 20%, just like if you were going to a restaurant. That's how much you should
Whoa.
Be paying.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit.
I mean, I'm wondering if that's an attempt to influence future deliveries, right?
Well, sure.
As opposed to claiming what the standard is, right? If you,
tell me again how it works. If I order food for Sue and I tonight, and it's $50, and they always give like the suggested tips.
Yeah,
and I usually take their highest suggestion, thinking, well, what more than that can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And if the highest one is say $8.50, do you see that and you can take it or not take it?
So they send you the order, and you can choose to decline or accept it. If you decline too many, though, they don't like
write
that.
You off?
Yeah, they're like, all right, well, we're going to stop sending you deliveries if you just keep denying
them. How do you cipher out how much you're getting?
So they will tell you how much total that you will get. They don't tell you what the tip is, but they do tell you how much your total order is. So an order will come through.
You probably get pretty good at figuring that out.
Yeah. If an order comes through and it's, a Dairy Queen that's 6 minutes away from the person who's ordering it, and they're ordering, you know, a Sunday, and you're going to get $15 for it, you know that person's probably leaving you $13 or $14.
Do people do that? Do people, I've never ordered, like sometimes I just want a Happy Meal. I just want a Happy Meal.
Oh, yeah.
It's $8. People do that?
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of, the people who don't care if they, you know, don't get as many deliveries or whatever, they usually deny those. Because I believe the amount of money that you get is calculated by tip, how far you're going, and how large the order is. How large the order is, I wouldn't think that would come into play, but it does. So you're going to get a lot less if you just order like a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
GS Wheeler's got to leave a little early today at 3 p.m. for baseball, so we're going to make him work now and do Stairway.
All right. Hey, so I was thinking about this. I had a different plan, but I had a text exchange with a whole bunch of friends. We're on the same thread, and we're always mostly talking about sports. And we were kicking around the NFL thing that we were talking about and just some other stuff. And one of my buddies said something that hit me, and I thought I'd bring it up to you guys because I want to see if you can think of any examples of what I'm talking about. So he was going on about how he can't watch sports like he used to. When his teams are losing, it frustrates him. He finds himself angry all the time. He gets mad about, you know, like how much people make or the problems that exist today. And my response was two things. It was one, well, they were all the jerks always ran thing, right? Like owners in pro sports 50 years ago were just taking advantage of the athletes. Right. There was no free agency. They had no power. So they were just taking advantage of people. That always existed in college sports. It was always holding them back. You know, and it was dirtier than people know. Like John Wooden. You guys all know John Wooden is like the legend of coaching. All the championships at UCLA in basketball in the 60s. They were dirty. I mean, there are books about it. Yeah. There was.
What do you mean? Dirty?
What do you mean? How dirty?
They had a booster paying the players, and he knew about it.
Oh.
He wasn't a part of it, but it was one of those, it's kind of like the Joe Pa thing at Penn State where you kind of hear it, but then you don't really, you know? And we know this. There are books about it. Guy's name, I think, is Sam something or other, but It's a known story. So the fact is the past wasn't what we thought it was. The present is just a new version of that. So we were going back and forth on this. And then I actually said this. If you had another hobby, any hobby, where your enjoyment of that hobby was entirely about the outcome. Because he was like, I really wish I would have taken up hunting like some of my other buddies did. So the way sports fans view their teams essentially is if they're not good, I'm miserable. If they're not going to win, I'm miserable. So if you're a hunter, that would be like, if I don't come back with a 10-point buck every time, I'm going to be mad. Well, you're not gonna. Like, isn't the fun of a thing supposed to be experiencing and doing the thing?
Yes.
It'd be like Rachel playing tennis and saying, it's not fun if I don't win every time. Like, do you,
well,
are
that's
there,
true.
Can't imagine that.
are there,
that sounds
do you
crazy
guys,
to me.
Can you guys think of any other pastime that that people do for enjoyment where it is your enjoyment of it is entirely based on what people have nothing to do with you, whether they win or lose game?
I think that's a lot more common than you think, actually.
No, I know it's very common. My point is, like, what are the other pastimes where you're entirely dependent, your enjoyment of it is entirely dependent on the success of that game?
I think it depends person to person is what I'm saying. I think that, you know, somebody else maybe playing tennis might play and go, oh, I don't even care if I lose, I just love playing. And then other people are like, no, I like to win. If I'm not winning, I have a miserable time. Like, you know, my wife and I play the card game together, right? So it's like, I just love playing it. I love everything about it. But my wife is having a lot less fun if she doesn't win. She likes to win. I don't know if that's just a
but
more...
But this is the difference. You're doing the thing. You're not just watching the thing. You're not just experiencing the thing. You're actually in it. I get that. I'm talking about something that you experience as a fan. Like, if it would be as if your enjoyment of a television show was related to it having the best ratings. Would you not? I mean, do you like the show more if other people like it, or do you just like the show? Like, if you, I mean, this was kind of my point to my friend, was you should be able to look at the game or anything you're doing for fun for what it is, which is why the Cardinals draw so well, right? People aren't there because we have to see a win every time. They're there because they like being at the ballpark for 3 hours and having a beer. And
I think we have sort of forgotten that, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially given the season last year and the season this year and the reaction we're having to it. I mean, like, look, I want the Cardinals to win. I want them to win the World Series every year, but I'm a casual enough fan that I can have fun at a 5-1 loss because I'm having a dog and a beer. I'm with my friends. I'm with my kids. So I'm the other. Now I'm hyper competitive when I'm involved.
Right, right.
But when I'm not involved, I'm cool just laying back.
Yeah, I blew that. That was when I brought up the tennis thing because it's a different thing when you're actually participating.
Well, it is when it's Rach.
Yeah. It's just like,
what about if you listen to this show and we're having, and it's like, man, I can't wait to hear the DGS, and then we throw like a not funny show that day? Because I could see people being like, oh, I only enjoy it if it's like a really good show.
Right, but that would be, what I'm talking about is if they were only invested if we had certain level of ratings.
Okay.
I heard something.
Because the outcome is one thing, but the process of actually listening to the show or watching a TV show or watching a ball game should be what you're enjoying, right? The entire process of it is the fun, not just the outcome.
Something similar to this, I just read a study. I love saying that because you know I didn't read the study.
I know.
That means you watched the TikToks.
Yeah. But it was about how much we need and how much we don't get. Non-intentional thoughts. Things like me riding a motorcycle, Sue riding her bike, fishing, going out into the woods, hiking, just things that it's not your brain talking to itself and worrying about money and worrying about the kids, that we don't do enough Zen stuff to where our mind just kind of goes blank and we're experiencing things. That's why many of us love roller coasters or the Rocco Plains at a carnival or the sights and the sounds of a casino or kind of mindlessly playing blackjack, is that you go to like the alpha state or zeta, whatever it happens to be, and we're not getting nearly enough of that, and it's one of the reasons we're so stressed. Makes sense to me.
It does.
Oh, totally.
It does.
And if you take something like that, like baseball, and then you ruin it by only having a good time when your team thrashes the other team, you're...
And that's kind of the thing, right? Like, there can be a bad game. Like, Rachel, you make the analogy of a bad show or a bad segment. There can be a bad game, that your team wins. True. But if it's a bad game and they win, you're like, yay, that was a good time. But in reality, it was an ugly, awful, bad, boring game.
That could be.
And there can be games that are amazing and exciting and fantastic, then you lose.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of my point about it. And I think we're better at it with other pastimes, with other hobbies, with other things. But with our sports, we need to be better at separating the fun from the outcome.
Welcome back, guys. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Rick, you were an unindicted co-conspirator in a bad moment I had this morning. Would you like to hear about it?
Yeah. Let me. Well, I would love to hear about it. By the way, I got a lot of energy today for this because of the off day yesterday, so I feel like the Energizer Bunny. But go ahead.
Well, you're pretty close. So I haven't been sleeping great, and this morning I told Rach, we share an office, I'm like, hey, do me a favor, close the door. I'm going to try to catch a 10-minute little cat nap here. And I'm just starting to fade off, and I hear a knock at the door, and it's our mutual friend, Ben Boyd. And he opens up the door with a flourish, as he does, and he goes, hey, Glove. I got something for you, and I know what it is. It's a Ricky Horton, John Rooney bobblehead for KMOX Radio Day, and I'm really genuinely excited. It's my friend Rick, and he'll sign it for me, and he'll sign Rooney's butt that says, like, to my best friend Dave, and I'm just, and I, Rachel was there for this. I literally stand up to receive my gift. Boyd puts his hand in his pocket and pulls out the middle finger, and I'm like,
oh my God. And I knew he was going to do that.
How did
it.
I not know? I've seen him do it 50 times.
Oh. Yeah.
And you woke up for that. That's what you're telling me. You woke up for that.
Not only did I wake up, I stood up like a schmuck. Oh, he loved it. It was the best part of his day.
Well, I'll get one and I'll save one for you for sure.
I love it. Okay, we're going to start with the Ricky question. And here's my question for you. It's a get-to-know Rick Horton question. Last time that we spoke, we talked about, you said that to be a major leaguer, you got to have some sort of talent that God put in and left out of other people. Had God left that out of you? Had you made it to high school and college and you're a good player but not good enough for the show, what two or three jobs do you think Ricky Horton could have been happy doing?
Well, I know the job I would have been doing. I would have been an engineer at IBM in my hometown because that's what I thought I would be since the age of 14. I'm from a hometown that everybody worked at IBM, and I studied engineering in college, and that was kind of the idea that baseball was going to get me to college to get me a degree, so I would do that. And then I found out that I could throw a slider pretty well, so that would be even more fun. Although, as I evolved, I realized I didn't really like engineering as much as I thought. I would probably have preferred to be a high school history teacher and coach.
Oh boy, I hear that a lot from like professional athletes, including you, Wheels.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a pro, but I mean, you know what? Doing that stuff is fun.
What I really want to do, I would love to write too. You guys gave me the idea in the last segment. I'd love to write a book called The Zen of Baseball, but maybe I'd just rather think about it than write it.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah, definitely be easier that way for sure.
More zen for sure.
All right, Rick, so quick note on the news today. We talked about Sonny Gray yesterday, so we know he's going tonight. Obviously gives you a big edge in any game when he's going. Let's talk about Steven Matz for a minute because he's going to the injured list, and I'm curious. I haven't seen anything yet from Ollie or anybody about who might end up taking that spot, but that really creates an interesting question when we get into the next series against the Mets.
Yeah, it's not a decision you have to make today. I know Zach Thompson has been kind of stretching out the minor leagues to be a starter, and of course he's done that before, so that's certainly a choice. You know, there's not really a lot of other options that are like, you know, big league ready right now. There's some guys that are pitching well. Graceffo's pitching well. Robertson's pitching well in AAA, but do you want to rush them? Tink Hentz has been lights out in AA, but, you know, that's a big jump to expect those guys to be able to be ready to go to fill his spot. You know, I'm not sure what that answer is. Obviously, Leahy is here now, but I think when the start comes up, I guess my guess would be Zach Thompson, but I don't know.
You know, they do have the makeup of the pen right now, Rick, where they have a few guys. Like, if you did call up Zach Thompson and he's not totally stretched out, He could go two or three innings, and then you've got a few guys that are capable of doing that same thing after that. Maybe you call back Pallante to do some of that. Maybe Leahy does. Maybe Liberatore does. So they do have some flexibility if you want to start it with kind of a bullpenish game and then see where you are the next time through.
Yeah, and that's always important to build your bullpen that way so you can have guys go multiple innings. You know, Ryan Fernandez can go, I'm not saying three, but he's certainly gone two. And, you know, two innings right now is like forever. I mean, for a reliever to do that, that's like a big deal. You know, I'm really looking forward to Keenan Middleton coming back whenever that is. And, you know, it's been a little slow on the news with Riley O'Brien. You know, I would have hoped he would have been closer than he is right now, but he's not.
Rick, on the positive side, you and John have talked a lot about him this year. He's been unbelievable. He's been absolutely dominant. But Ryan Helsley, the reliever of the month in the National League for April, and he's always been good, especially when he's been healthy, but he seems even a little bit sharper than he normally is.
Not only sharper, but he's ready every day. I mean, he wants to take the ball every single day. The Cardinals have kind of given up on the idea of making him go an inning and two-thirds or kind of going in two-plus innings. He's just a one-inning guy. And that seems to have settled kind of how he is able to kind of pitch multiple times in a week, and I think he's comfortable with that. And that's quite a weapon. When you've got a guy that can pitch three or four times a week as a closer, that's a big deal. And he really wasn't that guy last year, but again, it may have been the total innings that kept him from it. So, and he has been amazing, not walking anybody, and he's an absolute threat.
So, Rick, taking on the White Sox, who I believe have won six more games than me. What is the mindset? Because we're not setting the world on fire, clearly ourselves. No. But what's the mindset when you play a team that's really, really struggling? Can it be even more pressure?
Well, it can be. I mean, there's enough pressure in this game and really any professional athletic kind of venue. You can make pressure whatever you make it. I mean, you can read about it, think about it, listen to it all day long, and you can, you know, worry yourself to death. So, you know, I think the back to the word zen that we were using earlier, I think the player has to get to that point where that isn't really a factor. You just go do what you do. And, you know, the Cardinals, should they win this series? Absolutely. Could they go 5-1 this homestand? I think that'd be a good thing to shoot for. Frankly, I think you've got it right in front of you at home, and I think that could be a jump start for them. But, you know, you can't allow yourself to be thinking too much about the competition. You just have to do what you do. And, you know, White Sox certainly been struggling. They do have Tommy Pham and Paul DeJong. I'm actually interested in connecting with those two guys.
Rick, on that mental side and looking at the hitting, the offensive side of things, I saw Turner Ward with some interesting comments to Katie Wu of The Athletic today about how you can't chase results, right? That if you're chasing the results, right, you're putting yourself in bad position. You're not necessarily getting the pitches to hit. How hard is it to not do that when you know the team needs you, whether you're Goldie or Arenado or Nolan Gorman or whatever? But how hard is it to try to avoid even thinking about that?
It is hard because you get inundated with results. You fly out three times and you're 0-3 and you look on the board and your average goes down for a hitter. And clearly hitting has been a problem for us. But you hear guys say this all the time and it sounds so trite. I mean, they say it a million times, but it is actually what it is about the process of what you do. So if you're focusing on the process, a good at-bat is when you went through the process right and had good swings. The result is what it is. You get two bloop hits in a game, you shouldn't feel good about that day. I mean, it helps your average, yes, but that you're not right. You're not right with your swing. So, I mean, I think guys say that because that's really where they have to live, in the process, not the result.
Have a great call, Rick.
Thanks, guys.